Listening Dog Media.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The Athletic.
Hello, it's the Offside Wall and Kate Borsay with you for a bumper show today featuring a very special guest. Coming up later on, we're going to be discussing the underrepresentation of women in the men's game with one of the directors of the board at Brentford, Preeti Shetty. So stay tuned for that. First of all, let's welcome the usual duo. Yes, the three amigos are back together. Sky Sports star, it's got written here, Hayley McQueen. She's back with us. Hi, Hayley.
My star hasn't been shining of late. I've had a few too many Halloween parties and still not managed to get every little bit of it out of my hair either. I'm talking about face paints galore. But yes, I'm back in the land of the living, just about having been part of Day of the Dead the other day.
Oh my goodness, it sounds like a scary prospect. Let's hope it calms down a bit on the show today. And this week we've managed to pin her down. It's our ears on the ground, the eyes, well, on the road mainly as she travels backwards and forwards all over the country. It's Premier League reporter and broadcaster Lindsay Hooper.
Hello, eyes always on the road ahead, on the road ahead. I think Hayley is the only one of the three of us, Kate, that went full Halloween and went fancy dress attire, saw a beautiful video of you and your daughter Ayla. Kate and I were turning into bar humbugs. We're not actually participating anymore in Halloween.
Can I just put a 50-50 foot in this conversation? I'm not bar humbug, but I was working on Halloween night. So all of my Halloween prep happened over the weekend. Arthur and I went to the local pound shop and bought for £4, by the way. How often does that happen? You go to a pound shop and things aren't a pound. Anyway, we bought a £4 skeleton, probably contributing to the world's plastic crisis. But we bought a £4 skeleton called Jimmy that we put together and hung over our big planters at the front of the house, and we made a big Halloween display. There's pumpkin, but I wasn't around to kind of reap the rewards of all my efforts. I didn't receive any trick or treaters, but by the time I got home later that night, all the swag had gone, so I presume it was successful.
Completely passed us by. I didn't even realize it was Halloween. And then last year we got in loads of sweets thinking that people would be knocking the door, so we got in loads and not one person came, so we ended up with all these sweets, so we just didn't bother this time.
Fair enough. Oh, humbug.
And unless your house looks inviting, you just don't go in these days, do
that's
you?
That's what I was told. Yeah, that's what I was told, is that we weren't inviting people to knock the door, but I'm happy with that. That's fine.
You need a pumpkin with a light on it, effectively, to welcome people in. And if you don't do that, it's fair enough that people stay away. Anyway, enough of the Halloween chat. That has been and gone. And I know you guys have been up to a few other things this week, not just painting faces or slapping some sort of Halloween mask on your own face, Hayley McQueen. You have been, in fact, you've hosted a whole series of events based around diversity, haven't you, with Chris Hughton and Hope Pal. I know you did another one of those. Tell us how that went.
Yeah, it was really interesting, actually, that in business they are using sports people, men and women, to draw from and we're going to have a discussion a little bit later, I think, aren't we, about, I guess, lack of representation, yet they're holding up these men and women in football to show business world how it's done. I'm like, oh God, well, we've still got a lot of work to do here. But it was really interesting. I went over to Canary Wharf, which, oh my gosh, is a completely different place to what it was like when I was there. There's shops and fancy restaurants and everything. We had a real good discussion about how strong management principles, and this was really great from Chris Hughton, you know, focused on mental health and how sport could relate to things, I guess, in the corporate landscape. Chris had some really interesting, you know, sort of insights and thoughts on that.
Lindsay, you've been on your travels, not so far to go though, for Fulham versus Everton. That was 0-0, no goals for Fulham, which is unusual, bearing in mind how many they've scored this season. Tell me about the pitch side reporter position, because this is one of your favourites, isn't it?
It is. It's not very often that I pay more attention to a goalless draw, but I am going to hone in on it purely for the fact that as reporters, often the pitch side position, certainly if you're a pitch side reporter, either for the host broadcaster or for the world feed, you do get a privileged position, usually next to or behind one of the benches. But on this occasion, you're actually on the bench. So at Fulham, when you're looking directly at the benches, you've got, you know, Everton on one side, Fulham on the other, and right in the middle are two reporter positions, of which I was one of them. And it's just intriguing because you obviously get to overhear all the conversations that happen. There was a real big contentious moment actually in this game where Mitrovic went in and it looked like a dangerous tackle on the replay, certainly, on Idrissa Gueye, and he got a yellow card. And I have a monitor right in front of where I'm sat. So there was suddenly, you know, craning necks from the Everton side trying to look at the replay of the tackle. And it was one of those as well that when it was slowed down, it did look really bad. And then that triggered a motion of events where Asmir Begovic was shouting from the bench to the fourth official, Simon Hooper, "What's he got to do? Break his leg?" And then you've got Frank Lampard as well saying, no, that's a red card, that's a red card. So being right in the middle of that, it was just so interesting.
I love that, Hoops. You are literally picking everything up.
Yeah, I love it. I love Craven Cottage. It's that oldie worldie grand that now has this brand new riverside stand, which I've still not been in and seen the swimming pool and the members area. It's all meant to overlook the river. I think they're opening that up later on, but the stand is in use now and all of the fans can go in there. But wow, what a position you get. What a lovely area as well, where the ground is. You just feel so safe walking out of Craven Cottage. My car was parked quite far away, actually, but it was just lovely. People, speaking of Halloween, so tastefully done in Fulham, Hayley, all the pumpkins and lanterns. I just thought, oh yeah, I could just, it's maybe the only football ground I could live next to.
Oh, well, I'd say so as well. It's a very nice part of London, isn't it?
Yeah, does that say that I've just got expensive
taste? Yeah, Lindsay's mixing with all the Sloan Rangers in Fulham. I know you've been doing some European football as well. You covered Spurs, their draw against Sporting Lisbon in the Champions League, West Ham as well. I mean, I am, you know, a really disgruntled Liverpool fan at the moment because we appear to be brilliant when we're playing in the Champions League, 2-0 against Napoli.
That was
first loss
one,
of the season. Yes, it was. But, you know, again, coming off the back of a really frustrating defeat. If it's not Nottingham Forest, it's Leeds this time. It's just annoying to be a Liverpool fan at the moment. For me, later in the week, actually, I'm going to be interviewing Jermaine Genus. He's talking about mental health and actually men owning up to having mental health problems within football as well. And he'll be kind of discussing various crisis points during his career. So I've got that coming up, which will be exciting. And Linz, I know that you did a really good interview this week as well. You've been talking to footballers who've been affected by cancer.
Yes, on the women's side of the game at Chelsea, I've sat down with Anne-Katrin Berger, the goalkeeper there, who for the second time has had thyroid cancer. It was completely inspiring. I mean, this has to be seen. It's going to be on Inside the WSL this week. It's an exclusive. She speaks in depth about what she went through in the summer. The fact that she was playing as well in the Euros, got all the way to the final with all of this going on.
Yeah, and
you get a real insight to her character and her mental resilience. I think that's how I would describe Anne Katrenberger, mentally resilient.
Yeah, we had Chen Beatty in the women's game as well, who suffered from breast cancer. That happened last year, and she's thankfully in remission, and you know everything seems to be fine at the moment. But for it to return again, of course, is another prospect entirely, especially when your living remains and relies on being well, physically well, but it's also the mental toll as well it must take on you. So that's on Inside the WSL on Sky Sports,
yes,
if you want to check that out. And Hayley, you've been filming an advert this week.
Yeah. Do you know, I wanted to reveal the outcome of the filming. Ooh. It's not out until next week, but I'll give you a little teaser. It was really good fun. I know. You can probably guess which came in at number one. So we were counting down from 10 to 1 of the most controversial and outrageous refereeing decisions in World Cup history. So it was for Samsung. They've got these really cool, like, Neo QLED 8K TVs. And they're kind of thinking, you know, a lot more people are going to be in watching the football and maybe not gathering around pubs and having, you know, back garden marquees with sort of screenings. There'll be a lot more people at home who'll be watching on TVs and they might want a new TV. But the whole point of this was not to flog TVs. It was to say to FIFA, we've got these TVs so good that we can basically, we're going to give you them. We're going to give you them to make the VAR experience absolutely spot on. And my part
there
in this was to
take... There's definitely a sly dig involved in that, isn't there, Hayley McQueen?
Yes. Mine was to take you through this, I think there were just over 2,000 fans who'd voted for the most kind of controversial and what the outcome of the World Cup would potentially be had they have been punished, had we have looked at it and VAR and realised that, you know, the disallowed goal shouldn't have been disallowed or the ball that was very clearly over the line actually was over the line. There was the Thierry Henry handball, Frank Lampard was in there. I think you can probably guess which came out as number one. It was the most, go on.
Well, I got the top three. So I got the Maradona hand of God.
Have you been testing yourself, Hoops, on this?
You can't say anymore. You can't say anymore.
Okay. When Hayley got in touch and told us about this, I suddenly started thinking, oh, what would make the top three? So, of course, Maradona's hand of God is going to be number one. We know that. I won't ruin
Hayley,
because obviously you've got the other list coming through. But what I will say, if you think you can predict the top three, I'd got a couple more in there that I thought of, but they come later down the list. Number four surprised me, but then it was the year I was born, so... I suppose that...
Are you going to reveal what number four is? Because our poor listeners are thinking, what is it?
Tune in
next week. Hinting
we'll
okay, fine. I'll give you a clue as to number two then, which you've sort of hinted at anyway. It prompted Mark Saggers, who was a TalkSport commentator at the time, to go, it's a goal! It's a goal! It's a goal! It's such a brilliant... I will never forget that audio because it is one of the joys of my life, remembering that all over again. To find out, well, probably next week's podcast, or just check out Hayley's Twitter feed if we have seriously frustrated you with some of those. Well, look, coming up, today's big talker, the underrepresentation of women involved in men's football. First, though, a quick reminder that you can subscribe to us, The Offside Rule, on your favourite podcasting app. Please do that. Give us a follow. You can also follow us on Twitter at Offside Rule Pod, and do check out our brilliant website. Please do, offsiderulepodcast.com. So on today's episode, we want to take a deep dive into a topic really close to our hearts, the number of women involved in men's football and how actually women are still really underrepresented in the game. More women watch and engage with football than ever before, but that doesn't seem to translate to what happens behind the scenes at football clubs, at media outlets and beyond. In fact, it's estimated that 26% of fans that attend Premier League games and 30% of fans that follow or watch the Premier League on TV or online are female. There's a massive female audience there. However, there's important questions to ask, like whether it's a welcoming environment for women. A survey conducted by Her Game 2 found that 92% of the women who they spoke to had seen sexist online abuse directed at women in football. As you know, we recently celebrated 10 years of The Offside Rule. We told stories about our journey. And of course, we're still the only all-female podcast covering men's football. The landscape as women in the men's game needs discussing. Now, as I've said, Brentford FC director Preeti Shetty joins us shortly. But first of all, I'd love to get your perspectives on it. Lindsay, when I talk about underrepresentation of women in men's football, what springs to your mind first?
Definitely writers. So I think there's still a shortage of female journalists covering the game. I think we've got more women coming through the door in broadcast, but certainly written journalism has a huge shortage. I think of boardrooms, I think of decision makers, I think of people who recruit, and I don't think we've got enough women in those rooms. I also think about one of the things we explored. I know that on a recent show, I mentioned about the listening project that we did when we teamed up for Offside Media Productions with the Football Supporters Association. And one of the things I think about is football phone-ins and the fact that we very rarely hear female voices. And I think part of that is intimidation, feeling like you're going to be ridiculed for having an opinion. You do hear the odd one, but it's certainly, I mean, we're talking less than 10% when you listen to a football phone-in. And then really fresh in my mind, Liv Cook, a football freestyler. I was just looking at her social feed yesterday, and what she's done is she's parachuting. I mean, she's such a talented freestyler. She's won the best in the world. She's incredible with a football in all sorts of scenarios. And she's parachuting and she's doing keepy-uppies whilst on a parachute. It is incredible footage if you haven't seen it. But some of the comments underneath are just abhorrent. It's awful. You know, the fact that a woman has this talent that some of the people that are commenting could only dream of having, but they've got to say about women being, you know, involved in football, why are they? And I don't know, I just get so bored of it.
Yeah, so still those age-old ridiculous questions which completely ignore the fact that here is a woman with a skill, probably much more skilled than many of the people commenting, and yet she's being ridiculed for it. And briefly for you, Hayley, when I talk about the underrepresentation of women in the men's game, what's your first thought?
Yeah, I think in broadcasting, we're definitely visible, but it is then not carried on behind the scenes enough. Sky Sports News is an example of how we have had to tackle that over the years. And we used to hire women in broadcasting roles for the wrong reasons. We're definitely doing it for the right reasons, but I think we've had to undo quite a lot of damage caused by Sky Sports News and the portrayal of how a woman was and the role that a woman had to play when you used to present alongside a man, you know, 15 years ago, it wasn't very often that the female would get a lead story or would even start the news broadcast. It would always be the man leading and the woman would chip in, wouldn't be breaking the big stories. That has completely changed.
Well, you have your own show now.
Things behind the scenes. I know, right? I'm nobody's sidekick. but I just think the more visible we are, the more that people have better role models to look up to, the more people will start to apply for roles and apply for positions. We have so few women applying for production roles at Sky Sports News, our journalism roles. I won't go into it in massive detail, but Norwegian football is leading the way when it comes to gender equality. And one thing I was chatting to Hope Powell and Chris Houghton at a diversity event a little while ago was quotas. And they've actually completely changed their mind on that and said, you know what? I think we have to have quotas.
Quotas is a really interesting point, and actually perhaps something we should aim at our guest, who it's high time we heard from, because of course it's not just our experiences as journalists, it's also what happens behind the scenes in boardrooms, and also from a fan perspective as well. You know, fans need to feel welcome, and to your point, Lindsay, sometimes women are made to prove, perhaps, or feel that they have to prove that they know the game. It's a bit of a test before they're brave enough, perhaps some might see it, to pick up the phone and call up a football phone in. All right, well, let's continue this discussion then on the underrepresentation of women in men's football with our special guest on this week's episode, Preeti Shetty, who is non-executive director at Brentford FC. A big welcome to the Offside Rule, Preeti.
Thanks for having me.
I'm intrigued, first of all, about the process of you becoming a board member at Brentford. Tell us how you came to be there.
So I love telling this story because it's a really good example of how when you open things up, you know, you find new people. So I didn't have any previous relationship with Brentford necessarily. I saw the advert on the internet. I think it was on Sky Sports. And I saw it and I thought, you know what, that sounds interesting. I didn't realize you could be a director of a Premier League club. At the time, Brentford was Championship. But I didn't think that was an option. And so I found it quite intriguing. I applied. And then went through quite a rigorous kind of interview, shortlist application stage. I think in the end, I talked to 17 different people at the club over a number of months.
Wow.
And my final interview was, so we paused when it was obvious that Brentford was going to be in the playoff finals. And then the final interview was when we knew the club had been promoted. And so our conversations were sort of two very different ones around, okay, what, you know, what would you do now that we are a Premier League club? And so really interesting process, but I think a really good example of how when you cast the net a little bit wider, you get people that you might not, A, might not have thought to apply, and B, you might not know.
So that was an open call, basically, for anyone interested, what, male, yeah, female, young, old, obviously with a bit of a minimum age, but that was a direct plea from Brentford for anyone and everyone to get involved. So probably a huge amount of applications. But what that meant is that, you know, for you, this was absolutely a calling. This was you saying, okay, well, here is my opportunity to get involved, because it was all bets off. There was no experience needed, right?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, that's the thing, right? When I read it, you know, it wasn't one of these job descriptions that was like, oh, you have to have loads of this kind of experience or that kind. It was quite a broad open application that said, you know, there's areas we're interested in around community and, you know, fan relations and CSR and, you know, being purpose led. Like, but it was about the values of the club, rather than you have to have 10 years board experience and you know, you have to be a CEO and all of these things, which is normally the stuff that's limiting. And it was much more around, do you believe in the same things we believe in? And it's hard not to believe in these things. They're all quite nice things. And so I looked at it and I was a bit like, yeah, tick, tick, tick. You know, and there's that leap of faith that you have to make, I think, when you look at these, you look at job descriptions like that and you're like, could I even get it? And I very much went into it thinking, I'm never going to get it. But it's such an interesting experience to go through. And every time I got the call to say I was through to the next stage, you know, I would say to my partner, I'm never going to get it, but it's so cool that I'm through to the next stage. And the process alone, I think, gave me a lot of confidence in my own ability. And even if I hadn't got it, I think that would have encouraged me to apply for other things like this.
It sounds like as well, Brentford were casting the net wide. I'm getting from that they wanted someone different. They wanted a different voice. But, you know, even by you just being there, that's only the beginning, isn't it, Preeti? I mean, trying to then actually have an influence. How have you found that?
Yeah, it's been, you know, and you're spot on. It's one thing is getting it, and that's a story, and that's great. And it's had a lot of positive impact just with the attention and the awareness, but also, you know, that my first few months at the club, fans coming up to me and saying welcome to the club, and, you know, having conversations with little girls, like, the story alone made a difference. But it's what you do next that counts, right? And for me, what's been really brilliant, and I think the timing was perfect. I think maybe if I had come in to a pre-existing board in a pre-existing league where this is the way we've always done it, you know, maybe things would have been different. But I came into Brentford when it was our first season in the Premier League after 74 years. Everything was new for everybody. And so every day was, oh, this is a new thing we've never come across before. We'd opened a new stadium in COVID. There was a lot of new, and the club has been incredibly open to, we're getting a new director, we're getting new directors because we want something different. And so what do you think? And there was a lot of consulting and a lot of room to have conversations on, well, I think it should be this way, and what about this thing, which sometimes I think in a much more traditional club you can't do. Whereas at Brentford, there was a lot of room to say, well, we can do whatever we want. This is new territory for us, so let's be innovative and let's try and do, you know, not necessarily huge things, but make lots of good small decisions that will move the dial in some way for people like me, but also for our wider community.
Yeah, was the role one that you expected, like, sort of when you were in there and you were meeting the people that you were dealing with? Was it how you pictured it would be?
Good question. I think there were elements of it. So I always say I should have asked what the time commitment was, because I'm genuine. I spend a lot of time at the club and I love it, and that's great. But equally, I have a day job. I run my own business. And so the balancing of things, and, you know, I have realized that there is a reason that, younger people don't get on boards, because if you have a boss, how do you say to your boss, sorry, I'm going off to do my voluntary thing for a few hours? And, you know, if you're a parent, a carer, there are limitations to how much time you can spend. And Brentford's been really brilliant around working with me to say, well, when is good for you? And do you want to do evenings? But yeah, there is an element there of, it's a big commitment that you're taking on, and it's not just board meetings. And, you know, I'm on a few other boards, but they're charity boards. And so I hadn't fully understood that time commitment, but also how quickly I would become so invested that I want to be part of everything. And when you have the opportunity to make contributions, you want to make that contribution. And so, you know, so that's been interesting. I think the meeting directors from other clubs has been really interesting. You know, I often describe it as a bit of a dance, because there's a level of formality to it. And, you know, you have a meal before the games and you sit with each other. But then at the same time, there, you know, a lot of them know each other. Football's a very small world. And so I've met a lot of new people. But I don't know. I think in my head, sometimes I thought like business gets done in these directors' boxes. And I've realized that's, you know, that's not necessarily true. The Premier League and clubs talk to each other a lot. And so you just pick up the phone and you talk to each other because we're all in it together.
Yeah, it's that open access as well, yeah. which must be really insightful. And all of this is founded on the fact that we know that gender diversity in the boardroom improves financial performance in sport and in other industries as well, something you'll be well aware of, Preeti. Despite this, let me just give you the figures. 11.1% of board members at Premier League clubs are women. Preeti is one of the 11.1%, of course. Mm-hmm. That's compared to nearly 40% across FTSE 100 companies. So that's the difference, 10% to 40% in real world business. Two-thirds of England and Wales's leading clubs have all male boards. So my question is, you're there on the board.
Preeti's already shaking her head at that.
You are already there on the board, Preeti. But there's a famous saying about diversity and inclusion. Diversity is being invited to the party, being on the board. Inclusion is being asked to dance, making an influence, actually getting to do stuff. What's your experience been like of not just being on the board, but being part of the board?
Yeah, it's a great question, right? And, you know, as I was going through my sort of application process with Brentford, you know, I've worked in football for a long time. I worked in grassroots football, but I know how the sector works. And I did think many times, is this token, right? I'm ticking many boxes here. I'm an Asian woman. I didn't want, and I don't have the time for a token position. And one of the things that really sold it for me at Brentford is I wasn't the only woman and I wasn't the only person of color. And that tells me something, because they have one of those already, right? And so it immediately puts you on a different footing, because my first thought is not, oh, what do all women think? Because Monique's there and there's two of us, and, you know, I'm not asked to just speak on behalf of an entire group of people, whether that's women or people of color. And so that's the first thing. I think the second piece, and Brentford's very good at the kind of diversity side, especially on our board, and it's a statement. You're starting at the top. And there's many of us. And so we can talk to each other and we realize, and I think it makes everybody else realize, my experience is different from Monique's and my experience is different from Nitti's and different from Deji's. Mm-hmm. And so already we're educating and we're raising awareness of the fact that we're not homogenous groups. And so we don't have all the answers, yeah. Right?
Monique is Monique Chowdhury, who joined the board at the same time as you. We should tell our listeners that. So that's hugely important. Are there clubs out there at the moment who aren't inviting you to dance as well as inviting you to the party? Can some Premier League clubs, some football clubs maybe be accused of token hires as they try and get behind women on boards? Or are they just not appointing women at all? Are we not even at the point where you're invited?
I think it's more that, right? Like, I think when, and the clubs that we have seen, when there are women on boards, it is inclusive and they are being, at least in my experience, I'm being asked to dance for sure. I think the problem that we're seeing is those appointments just aren't being made. And partly that's because, you know, the way clubs are structured, you don't have to do that. Nobody is forcing you to do that. And so, and they're missing out, like, to your point, that so much good comes from having diverse boards and having diverse leadership. But if the opportunities aren't there, then there's nowhere for you to apply. And I think partly this, you know, I'm hoping at least by having clubs like ours, and then there's lots of others in the Premier League, that the 11%, we are doing enough to show the other clubs that it's worth it. And it's worth having people like us, because we are bringing something that you might not already... You're in an echo chamber. If it's the same people that have been there for 10 years or 20 years, you're in an echo chamber with each other, and you need to hear other voices. And hopefully that's what we're showing.
How do you think that change happens to begin with? Because when I hear all of those statistics and two-thirds of football clubs don't have any female representation there, it makes me immediately think, because I know this happens across the board in other areas of football as well, where men look after men, they look after each other, there's nepotism, there's looking out for your mates, and that can trickle down for centuries. I mean, we saw with women's football how it was banned for 50 years. So how do you, I think that's the most important part, is get the club to open up in the first place.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that for me, there's two sides to this, right? It's the... For women that have made it, for lack of a better word, you're already there, you're in a position of power. You know, it's hold the door open and leave the ladder down, right? Like, are we consciously making sure that, and Monique, who's on our board, definitely did that for me. You know, are we making sure that we are providing opportunities for other women? But equally, I think there's a male ally piece here, right? Which is, this isn't, there's so few of us that even if we did everything we could, that's still not enough. And so what we need is male allies within football, within the business, who understand and appreciate the benefits. So they are actively looking for where they can develop support, help provide opportunities, open doors, right? And that, you know, that trickles through everything you do, through your recruitment, through your promotions, through conversations that you're having. I always talk about, you know, having allies, male allies especially, is, are they saying your name in rooms that you're not in? Because that is what we need in order to do this, right? And we have them. There are lots of male allies in football, but are we embedding this within every single element of our, you know, our, the different departments, the different levels? So everyone is thinking of it, because this isn't around equality. This is around equity first. We're not even there yet. Once we get to equity, sure, let's talk about equality. But there's a lot of work to be done to even get us onto a level playing field.
What's been the reception from, you sort of hinted at the beginning, Preeti, about people coming up to you. What has the fan reception been like, and what sort of communication do you have with supporters?
So really, you know, again, that was something that I'm a football fan, you know, I didn't really know how much you could engage with your club. And the reception has been fantastic. Like, again, Brentford's slightly different to other clubs in that our fans play a big role anyway. They have a golden share. They have a seat on the board. They've always had a lot of engagement with the club, vocal, good and bad. And so, you know, the reception has been fantastic. And like, people have gone out of their way to get in touch and say hello. And but, you know, equally, when they're unhappy about something, you know, come and have conversations when I'm walking to the game. But we have a lot of engagement with our fans. So one of the things that we do, for example, is we host female fan forums where fans can come and we have a bit of a, you know, a forum where we talk about operational issues. We talk about issues around language, misogyny, attitudes. Are fans anxious about things? And so, for example, one of the things that came out of a recent one was female fans saying they weren't feeling very comfortable at away games. And so a direct result of us doing, you know, hearing that was we've created these like family friendly areas at away games where people don't stand in those rows. And so you can say, I'm going to an away game and I'd rather sit there, because we've seen away fans just tend to stand the whole time and they're much more boisterous. And so it's providing those safe spaces to say, that doesn't mean you can't go, but we will actively make sure there's a space where you're sitting with each other. And that you're comfortable with each other. And if you tell us what the issues are, we will work together to come up with these things. And, you know, we do a lot of work with Her Game too. And so we have free sanitary products all over the stadium. And it's small things like that, but that's coming directly from fans telling us, here's what we want more of, here's what we like and don't like. And that's something we're really proud of.
We know that you've got lots of work to go and do, Preeti. We won't hold you back too much longer. I just wondered if you could try and myth bust or give us a solution to one thing. This might be the impossible question, but we share something with you. We all, because the four of us work in football, we all, when we tell someone that we work in football, will have had the response, so do you like football then? And being at the top of that tree at Brentford, you get to see the fabric of the football club, your fan base, how many women go, these forums as well that you've held where you get lots of women together. Why are we still being asked that question?
I think you're right. It's ridiculous. And like, when everybody I know you know, that gets asked that question is like, why would I be doing this otherwise? And you see us all the time and you see us engaging. So it's funny that you're still being asked the question. I think there is, it's a traditional game. And I wonder sometimes whether it's, they want the answer to be no, right? It's new. Like, people still feel like this is a new thing. And for me, that's the difference in a way with the women's game, where we're sort of just seeing a much more natural feeling of, nobody's asking men at women's games, are you a fan of women's football? Like, that's not, you know, that's not a question that we're asking. You're there because you want to be there, because you like the sport, because you like the environment. And for me, the answer doesn't always have to be, like, I've met a lot of female fans that are coming to every game, and they're not football fans, but they're there because their kids are, or because their partners are, or because they enjoy the food, the day out, the you know, the time away, whatever that is. I don't think you necessarily have to know the ins and outs of the game to enjoy it. And it's about creating that inclusive environment that means everybody can be there regardless of your level of football knowledge, because it's football is a public good. It's for everyone to consume and play and watch. And it's not up to you to put barriers on how I consume it.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to round it off there. It's been such a fascinating chat, and I'm really encouraged by what you're doing at Brentford. And of course, there is always more work to be done as well as we try and readdress the balance. But it's great to see examples of women on football boards and engaging with female fans at clubs as well. Preeti Shetty, our thanks from the Offside Rule. Preeti is non-executive director at Brentford FC. Great to speak to you. Well, that was a really interesting chat with Preeti Shetty there from Brentford. It's time for Any Other Business, ladies. Because we're doing one big discussion per podcast, we've got time for some other football news here. And there's one big story for me today. It's being reported in the Times, Lindsay Hooper, that Julian Lopetegui is right in the mix, basically, to be the new Wolves manager. He said no, didn't he, initially? He was their initial choice. But now he's thinking about it. And apparently, it's very, very close to him signing on the line. Or is it, Lindsay?
Not going to hold my breath. You know, this is the second time that he'd turned us down. He turned us down in 2016 as well. He turned us down this time because he had family issues, which I can't believe that they have changed. You know, he wanted to be close to his father. So if Lopetegui turns us down three times, I think probably he can take out a restraining order is where I'm at.
So if it doesn't happen this time, stay away, do not engage, do not engage him, he should not engage with us, all of that chat.
Well, I mean, it's bordering on harassment, isn't it? If he turns us down, if this goes ahead, fine. You know, I know that Neves really wants to work with him. I know that he's a manager that a lot of the team have been behind. He was the first choice. And I think that the dressing room have been consulted about managerial options. It would also mean that things like Terry Connor being interim manager, because he's been there before with Mick McCarthy, rumours like that might go away, which would be great, because it just all feels a bit desperate otherwise. But should he turn us down? Because until this is on the dotted line, Kate, I'm not going to believe it. But should he turn us down? It's bordering on embarrassing, isn't it? To go to someone three times. They're very brave, actually, to have made a third approach, I think. Because in my life, just judging on previous relationships and stuff, I would never three times. But maybe he's worth it, as
Let's
Lauriel would
see.
Say.
Let's see if the deal is done. Do you know what I've also noticed this week in the build-up to the World Cup? We're getting lots of discussions about which players are going to make it and which aren't. And Paul Pogba, of course, the big news in the last couple of days, he is going to miss out on the World Cup in Qatar. He's got to have more time to recover from the knee operation he's got. That'll be a real shame. And there's a few other players. When Bukayo Saka went down at the weekend in Arsenal's game against Nottingham Forest, I think everyone was like, oh, get up. Everyone's really worried about him. We've heard, haven't we, from Mikel Arteta that hopefully not is the line, that he's a doubt for the World Cup. So fingers crossed on Bukayo Saka. Otherwise, we'll have to start getting the old healing spoons out or whatever it is they do to try and fix players before the World Cup arrive. Hayley,
every little niggle at the moment, it's like holding your breath, you know, with Heung-min Son as well going down. You're like, oh my gosh, if you've even got so much as a niggle, there's just not enough time to recover from anything. It's quite stressful. Staying on World Cup news, obviously, there are lots of little stories now building up to the World Cup that are kind of non-football and sport related, and there are big discussions to be had. This is really strange. Supporters, have you read this, are being paid by World Cup organisers to attend the tournament. They're going to be called fan leaders. Fan leaders. There were two Dutch fans who said they'd been picked by the tournament organisers because they had to pick, apparently, a group of 50 loyal supporters for a free trip to Qatar. So not fans that were already going to support their clubs, an additional group of fans. They've signed a code of conduct and they are being basically used to post just positive things on social media. And they say any offensive, degrading or abusive comments will be rid of them.
It's bribery.
Deleted. They just want them to post favourable comments. It's really strange.
Well, how can you ask someone to come, have a great time? You know, I understand you might want to say, oh, you know, come on board. We'll welcome some of these fans. And hopefully you enjoy it. But to say you can only post if you enjoy it, if you're not enjoying it, yeah, then you can't tell the truth. I don't agree with that.
Well, it's basically a plain disinformation campaign if the World Cup turns out not to be any good. But also, is what those fan-led reviewers or whatever they're called, if what they put is positive, is that really going to make loads more people jump on a plane and cross to Qatar paying, you know, 250 quid a night for a hotel room? Are they really going to make a difference? It's just, it does not sit comfortably at all with me. It's just a ridiculous idea.
Kate, you said it. The words came out of your mouth, if it's any good. And what I want to know from both of you is, do we think this World Cup is going to be any good? You take into consideration all of those injuries. Hayley mentioned some there, and apparently
Marco Royce as well,
orbital fracture of his jaw for Son. Yeah, Marco Royce you can add in, but also there were already big players that weren't going, that aren't injured, just because their countries hadn't made it. So there's no Salah at the World Cup, no Haaland. So are we even that bothered? Are we bothered this time? How are we feeling about it?
Of course we're going to get bothered. Also, I've organised a World Cup party for my son's birthday, so we're going to have to get bothered for the England-USA game on that Friday night. Bunch of eight-year-olds are coming over. I'm not taking them to Wembley this time, Hoops and Hayley. They are at home with me. We're going to have burgers for USA and fish and chips for England. That's what's going to be happening in our house on that Friday, 25th of November. So, of course, we're going to be getting into
brilliant.
It. Are you, Hoops?
I will be getting into it. I'm doing a little bit of work from back here around it. I know what I'm like, Kate, but the only thing that I can compare to so many previous tournaments is that my excitement levels are not the same for this
one. Is that just because it's a bit far away? As in distance wise?
No, I think there's been so much negativity. No wonder they're paying all these people to be positive, because I think there's been so much negativity around the tournament, with people dying in terms of building the stadia, to the LGBTQ plus treatment out there, to the fact of the cost for fans to be able to go, and there were a lack of hotels. People are having, I know from our point of view, from the media point of view, some people are staying on cruise ships, and there's all these different things that I've factored in, and I've just thought, there's something that doesn't fill me with joy about it. As soon as that first ball is kicked, and I'll be watching the very first match, I know what I'm like.
Yeah.
I'll probably get the sticker book and I'll probably become obsessed. But I am not feeling it right now.
Hayley, what about you? This is interesting, because at Sky Sports, of course, you are not one of the official rights holders, but you need to reflect the fact that the nation probably will be tuning in and deeply absorbed in this tournament. What are the excitement and, I suppose, commitment levels to the tournament at Sky?
We don't seem to have as many World Cup stranded programmes. I'm sure we'll have World Cup report. There's just been not much talk of it, to be honest. There were more emails, meetings and buzz around, you know, the women's tournaments of late. And the summer just gone was definitely an exciting one. And look what happened in the end. And I'm glad we went big on it, because look what exactly that, what happened in the end. I don't know whether it's because we're not expecting England to do so well, but Wales are there as well as another nation. We're sending fewer staff out there. I think ITV and the BBC have scaled back, you know, people that they're sending and crew as well. I think we were going to have a World Cup special breakfast show that's also been scaled back a little bit. So I'm really not too sure. I think the time of year is very difficult. We're going through a cost of living crisis as well. I think Sky have to be really careful about I'm just guessing they have to be careful about money that they're spending out of budgets.
Well, I suppose every broadcaster has to be mindful. It won't just be Sky. I think I know what the issue is. When we have a usual Euros or World Cup, the season finishes, then we get the final bits of it, you know, the Champions League final, etc., the FA Cup final, and then we have no football for a period of weeks before the tournament starts. And that's when we start to miss it and we start building up to a big tournament. We haven't got that this time necessarily, or so much, have we at all? So that's why it's weird, is that we're concentrating on domestic football, Champions League, and suddenly the World Cup is going to arrive. So give us a tiny break before the World Cup in amongst the already congested schedule, and perhaps we'll start to get excited about it. Can I give you a very random any other business, because I like to find these strange stories.
Yes,
you'll be delighted to know, particularly Lindsay will be delighted to know, that many clubs have already released their Christmas gift ranges. Gotta get this one in.
This is right up Kate Street. I don't know whether you've gone quite this early before, though.
No, well, I have gone early because it's worth it, to be quite frank. This year, top of any Celtic fans list must be, although it's expensive, this Celtic microwave. What? Oh, yes, it's £129.99 and it's in Celtic green. I kid you not, it's a microwave in Celtic green with the club emblem on the glass door at the front. So if anyone needs a new microwave and you support Celtic, or even if you don't, I suggest you hot-foot it over to the Celtic FC club shop.
They've picked a really strange time to launch that product. It's greens to me, you know, one for the office at work, but people are working from home more. You're not going to have that eyesore.
And also,
in your
the Rangers supporters are just going to blow it up, aren't they? In the office, you can't have an office full of Celtic supporters welcoming this bright green microwave.
I don't know. Oh no,
Hayley, a final one from you to round us off.
Well, you thought Newcastle were doing well at the moment. They're obviously anticipating doing very well indeed, because it looks like they're going to try and expand their stadium. I don't know how many more seats you could fit into the stadium, which is, of course, pretty much slap bang in the city centre. And there's been talks that they might have to move it elsewhere. I cannot imagine St James's Park not being at the heart of Newcastle. I mean, they're not going to move it down south like there were talks of a training ground. However, yeah, they had to give away tens of thousands of tickets just a few seasons ago to get the fans still to come because of what was happening under Mike Ashley. But now they're oversubscribed. People are desperate for tickets and season tickets, a bit like they were at Manchester United, you know, decades ago. But that's slowly waned, hasn't it? But yeah, you just wonder what's going to happen with all these stadiums and the ever-changing landscape of football stadiums and the biggest, oldest, you know, most historical ones soon to be gone. It kind of feels a little bit sad, although they're trying to make it positive, and they're trying to let fans know that these extra seats may be kind of built up on the existing plot, but it's not looking very likely. I think they might have to rip it up and move it, possibly even to Gateshead. What about right next to the Angel of the North? There's a lovely plot of land there, and then you can go and sit around the Angel of the North and have a little picnic on the mound.
There you go. Hayley's sorted it for you, Newcastle fans. Look, we'll finish up there. Our big thanks to Preeti Shetty, one of the directors of the board at Brentford FC. Such a fascinating chat, that one. Really good to have her speaking to us on the show. And don't forget to give us your feedback on the Offside Rule as well. Let us know what you think of the new feel, what you like, what you don't like, at Offside Rule Pod on Twitter and on Instagram. Hayley McQueen, what are you off to do next?
I am back from my little trip up north, so back into the Sky Sports News studio. I've got a couple of quiet days in the studio. I'll have Lindsay popping in to see me for our WSL feature, hopefully. And yeah, just having a nice little time, getting all snuggly and cozy now the weather has dropped, listening to this podcast over again.
Listen back to it.
Of course we should. Lindsay Hooper, for you.
I'm at Blackburn for Soccer Saturday at the weekend, and then I'm going over to Manchester United Women on Sunday. So that's my weekend sorted.
Pack those thermals, Linz. It feels like it's going to be a cold snap. Apparently snow, I don't know. Someone said, the Daily Express, said there'll be snow next week or something. Anyway, enough of that. That's all from the Offside Rule, myself, Kate Borsay, Hayley McQueen and Lindsay Hooper. We'll catch you next time.
You've been listening to The Offside Rule, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything offside at offsiderulepodcast.com and by following at Offside Rule Pod on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on The Athletic app.
The Athletic.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.